Welcome back to NALP's Young Professionals Network podcast, Growing in the Green Industry. Your hosts of today's episode include myself, Neil Glatt with Grow the Bench, Macy Wallenberg from Landcare, and Brett Lemke from RM Landscape. How's everyone doing today?
Going great, Neil.
Yeah.
Enjoying the snow like we are here in the Northeast.
Yeah, we lost two of our regulars, right? I think one is actually skiing in it, and the other one's probably sleeping or plowing in it, right? So there's two ranges here. Like, the love-hate relationship those two are having with snow. Right now.
Exactly.
It's 65 and sunny here in Dallas, so I don't feel the snow pain.
Always got to rub it in our face, don't you?
Yeah. But I heard, we've talked to the Landcare folks a little bit up in the north, so your company is stressing out a little bit in some parts of the country.
Ooh, oh, yeah.
That Northeast got pounded.
Yeah, it's a whole different world up there, that's for sure.
Well, in the meantime, Macy, you want to introduce our guest today?
Yeah, I'd love to. So as General Manager of Sun Valley Landscaping, Ashley Nineman leads the company through many challenges and hurdles of the green industry and the Omaha market. And more recently, COVID-19. In the last 10 years, Ashley has been the part of exponential growth, seeing the company from $950,000 in revenue to a goal of almost $7 million at the end of 2021. In that time, she has helped the company navigate a merger and 5 acquisitions, which included a complete rebrand and an irrigation division startup. Ashley was recognized as Midland's Business Journal 40 Under 40 in 2015 and currently serves as a board member for the Nebraska Nursery Landscape Association. Sun Valley has been recognized locally and nationally for their community outreach efforts by the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce. Nebraska's statewide Arboretum, Landscape Management, and Lawn and Landscape magazines, and most recently, the National Association of Landscape Professionals. Ashley founded Commit 20 in 2015 as a way for the company to celebrate their 28th year in business by not only giving back, but to encourage the shift in mindset of employees at Sun Valley. Ashley, is there anything that I missed there?
No, that sounds good, Macy. Thank you. That was a lot.
That was quite the intro. That was awesome.
It's always cool when someone else reads the intro about you and you get all excited. And so when you read yourself, you're like, man,
thanks for hyping me up.
Yeah. We should try to figure out how we get background music that just really builds up these
things a little bit.
But it's louder at the end. I think we need to work that into the next one.
Yeah, well, it's not in the budget yet. Well, welcome, Ashley. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, Omaha is overrepresented on this podcast, and I love it because Omaha is totally somewhere I would move if I had the ability to do so.
Really? Usually I get the opposite of that, of like, where's Omaha again?
That's because I've been to Omaha for some of my work with Gallup, and they have the best zoo in the country, and that's from somebody who grew up going to the LA and San Diego Zoo, so...
Yes, we are known for the zoo, College World Series.
Yep, the College World Series.
It's a big deal. Yeah, hopefully we get to have that this year.
I've never been to Omaha. It's always like directly north of where I've always lived, between like Texas and Oklahoma, but just never been up there.
You're missing out. It's a great place.
I know, I'll have to try to make it. Apparently the zoo's amazing, so.
It really is, yeah.
And I've been to the San Diego one, so I'm excited. I need to go to Omaha.
We'd love to have you.
So Ashley, how did you find yourself to Sun Valley? This industry been your career, or has it been other careers?
No, so that's a long story. I'll try to keep it sort of short, but no, I'm not a green industry trained professional by any means, or at least I am now. I wasn't starting my career, but I got a business and marketing degree out of school, and actually got my start in like health and wellness, business development and PR. And I did that for a few years. And from that kind of stemmed some event planning things that I did. And I really loved that part of what I was doing. And so I went out and started my own corporate event planning company. So this was, in my mid-20s or so, and did that for a few years until I just decided that, nights and weekends were really hard as a mom with young kids. And so Omaha is, if you've been to Omaha, I always tell people this is the biggest like small town I've ever lived in. It's a city, right? There's a metropolitan area, A really nice size market for what we do, but you know, it is a small town, so everyone knows everyone here. It's kind of funny, like we're all just connected. So, you know, I was kind of looking for my next career move after wanting to get out of the corporate event planning business, and just put the word out to some friends, and happened to be that the CEO of our company here at Sun Valley Landscaping actually went to high school with my then husband. So they connected with each other, and Paul found out that I was looking kind of for something in like a business role, and he was drowning currently with his company just because trying to do it all as a business owner. And I think we met for coffee a couple of times. And at the second meeting, he was showing me all of his books, his balance sheet, his P&L, and was basically like, here you go. So that's kind of how I stumbled upon the green industry, knew nothing really about the green industry. I knew a lot about growing a business, a small business, especially a couple of times over. And I was really intrigued by his vision, I think. And that's really kind of what got us to really be compatible. And, you know, I bought into like what he was wanting to do. And I was like, yeah, this sounds like fun. Let's do that.
It's really interesting because so many owners or CEOs, especially even at the $7 million revenue level, are still operating as their own general manager, right? But that's your role as general manager. So how does that play out in just kind of day to day with Paul as CEO?
That is a tricky one. So it's a lot of telling him to get out of the way. But I think I, you know, from where I sit, it's a unique advantage for me because I have the perspective of a business owner as an entrepreneur. And I also have the perspective of an employee, which he does not have. I always joke with him, like he's literally never been an employee of somebody else's before. So he doesn't bring that to the table. And I do. And so, you know, that's kind of why we can bounce off of each other. We can disagree, but, I think for me, you know, it's about just being, having the grit, I guess, and the guts to like stick up for what you believe in and what your opinion is. And I think that, that's what works well about our relationship and in our company. So yeah, we work really hard about staying in our lanes. And I think that's important.
I love how bold you are. You're just like, I'm just going to tell him like it is. And just like when you said, you know, he's not an employee, he hasn't been one, so he doesn't know. I just think that takes a really strong person to be upfront and say that to their boss, much less the business owner. So
yeah, well, we've worked together for 10 years now. 10 years, I've kind of earned it, I feel like.
You have to be able to say that if you're going to be successful, though. I really, truly believe that. If you can't have, I mean, a respectful, but an open and honest, and even sometimes tenuous, you know, conversation with your boss, who at, you know, at the higher level is going to be the owner, then you're not going to advance the company in any meaningful way.
I agree. I mean, I look for that in my employees, right? I look for that in the A players that I bring onto the team or that I've had that I want to develop. It's just like, I need people that aren't going to be the yes people on my team. I want the people that have like a different opinion, that have the different perspective than me, that, you know, they listen to what I say, but they're like, well, what if we did it this way instead? I think that every organization should have that at all levels.
Well, let me put you on the spot on that idea of never being the employee. I've done it a couple of times, tried it out, didn't like it, right? So, but for the listeners that are owners, what do they miss when they don't have that experience? Because I'm actually trying to think of like what that is that missing key or that connection point. Is it the empathy of working for someone?
That's a good question. Yeah, for me, I think the biggest miss that I have noticed over the years is just like, you know, we make a plan. Let's just use employee benefits as just an example, you know, and you're coming up with all these ideas. And, you know, one of our goals is to be like one of the best landscape employers in our region, right? So that's a big goal. That's a bold goal, you know? So in order to do that, we have to really look at our benefit packages and always look to improve those. And so, you know, Paul's opinion might be, or a business owner's opinion might be, well, gosh, look at this overhead expense and how much this is costing us. You know, shouldn't the employees just be happy with that? And, you know, what we've found, like, for example, that some of our field staff wasn't even using like our health and dental because that wasn't really important to them. There were some other things like paid time off and the money that they're bringing home in their pocket every day that were really important to them. So just trying to get, I guess, from a business owner's perspective, just understanding that listening and getting feedback from those employees is going to be key to the growth and like retention, right? And recruiting are all of our biggest problem. But I think it's just really hard as a business owner. You think, you know, your heart is in the right place. You mean well, but sometimes you might have these blind spots that you just don't see because you don't have the, you've never been in that seat or you haven't been in that seat for very long.
Yeah. We had a situation where the company had started to offer a 401k with matching, which was awesome, right? It was like 4% vested after 5 years. I was super ecstatic for it. And turns out I was one of the only people who was, because after 5 years, less than 10% of the eligible employees were putting anything towards the 401k. And it was a huge expense, you know, a huge initiative. And I think it came from a great place, and business owners probably get some sort of coaching like, hey, this is a competitive thing, or, you know, they're planning for retirement and saving for retirement, but it wasn't resonating with most of the full-time staff that could have, and it ended up just being misallocated money or a gap in education that employees really needed to understand the benefit and need for that kind of savings plan. Right.
Absolutely.
I think it's like the paid time off is obviously, like you said, money in their pocket things too, but even just equipment, you know, guys are happier when, if they're having to struggle all day with a blower that's not starting, or, you know, every hour they have to set it back down and work on it, oil anything, you know, they would rather have that versus breakfast tacos in the morning, like a brand new piece of equipment. Yeah. Well, it's nice and they enjoy the appreciation, you know, what's more valuable to them, the insurance that they don't use or a brand new piece of equipment. You walk up on Monday morning and say, here you go. Here's your new line trimmer. That's what they care about a lot.
I'm canceling breakfast next week for my team, apparently. So I'm blaming you, Missy.
I'm blaming you, Missy.
Still accepted.
But I had the breakfast coming, folks, but I was on a podcast the other day and I heard that's not that bad. I agree, right? And this is that conversation. We've had this, and I think in the past too, is walk a day in anybody's shoes and you'll understand them, be it as an employee, be it as just a person, and making sure you match that level of respect for the role, the responsibilities. And in it, as an owner that tries to be an owner and a manager, right? Where's the bias, right? Well, I'm going to try to manage this to be the most profitable business ever. And if you're a manager without a sense of what profitability means, you know, so you have to find that. And so that's your responsibility in sort of marrying the two, right? And Paul's very passionate about his people too, but it's making sure that those all align and have that value all the way down, right? Rather than just a couple levels.
Right. And it is about that education. Like, you know, Neil said, I think you just have to, people have to understand what you're doing. You can't just like, oh, we, you know, we're going to just throw money at this and we're going to put a plan on a piece of paper. It really is about, is it meaningful to the people that, you know, are the makeup of your organization, and do they really care about that? Does that impact their lives in a positive way or their jobs in a positive way? So, you know, I think that is something that is always like ever changing in our business. It's a discussion like every year that we have, at least once a year. You know, we want to reevaluate, what are we doing? Are we seeing it from their eyes, essentially, is really important.
So how has Commit 20 been perceived, or how are you relating that initiative to the company?
So when we started Commit 20, you know, we wanted to get out in the community more from like a giving aspect. Obviously we have talents and we have resources to do lots of things in a community, right? You know, we've done lots of community gardens and nonprofit gardens and landscapes that we maintain and things like that. And we're involved with snow care and green care for troops through Project Evergreen. So that was kind of like a thing that we wanted to like inspire our clients and our employees. So it's one thing to be an employee of a business and the business says, hey, I'm going to give you like 15 hours and you're going to go to the food bank today and I've got you scheduled and you're going to go pack some backpacks, right? But we were trying to, I guess, like spark care and concern, like that motivation for like being involved in your community and like seeing that your business wants to be a part of that too. So Commit 20, basically we challenged our clients, we challenged our employees, and we challenged our business partners, like vendors and things, to commit 20 hours of service to whatever they wanted in that year. And then we built a website and we had everyone input their hours. And our goal was to get 10,000 hours tracked on the website, and we wound up hitting 30,000 hours by the end of the year. So it was awesome. What it really did though is changed our culture a little bit. And so now it's not necessarily commit 20. We're not saying, oh, you have 20, you need to commit 20 hours of service this year. It's about just the way we do business. It's the mindset of our employees. You know, if they get approached by somebody in the community that says, hey, you know, I have this need. Do you think your company could help us out? You know, we consider it, or, you know, we set a budget every year and we take the things that we can. But really it's just about like making our, I guess, making our impression in our community, but like our, from our employee perspective, I think that they take ownership of it. And they are happy to like have an organization that backs that up.
I always thought it'd be so cool to have every employee or member of a team pick like any charity, any 501c3 that they were excited about, and pick like a half day a year that the whole team went and supported. Whatever, you know, whether it was like running a 5K or, you know, fixing a playground or whatever it was, I thought it would be like the coolest team building activity, because anytime I've worked or volunteered with a group of people doing something altruistic, like we've emerged way tighter, you know, from a team cohesive standpoint, regardless of, you know, opinions about what we were supporting.
I think it just raises a level of an awareness, I guess. You know, there are certain resources that maybe some of our employees have had to use. And they were introduced to those resources by partnerships that we've created in the community by doing this work. So it's just like an awareness thing of like realizing that your community is there for you, and you can be there for your community, and how you can make an impact.
Another good note for me. I think about how we often do get too busy with the business that we have and to do, and that these kind of moments and I think we had some initiatives, and then COVID came, and how do you sort of push through that piece where we want to be touching the landscapes and being out there and engaged, but now how can we financially support or just promote, right? Even those little steps can go a lot further than actually having to bring people together. And someday those 5Ks will be back, right? And we'll be doing that kind of stuff. But if anything, now more than ever, that need has become more apparent. And I think we've heard that resounding through the guests, just where that element of helping within the company or helping out in the community has become very, very essential.
I'm just intrigued by everybody that we bring on. You know, what have you kind of done? We talked about like going over those challenges with COVID. I think it's a question you always probably get, but I'm still intrigued by, you know, what you did and what you're doing currently, or the biggest kind of takeaway that you guys took from it.
Yeah. What an interesting year 2020 was. So, you know, with like everything that we did, I can go into all the specifics, but I'll just tell you that first, I'm really proud of like how we handled COVID in our organization. It was one of the, when we asked for some feedback in an employee survey this fall, that was one thing that the number one thing that people said, that they were really proud of like how we pivoted and like put a game plan together and kept adapting to the changes like every day, every week, right? We just took it really seriously. You know, March 17th was the day that we had our first Zoom call, company meeting, and I remember like being scared of being like, oh my gosh, what is this going to do to our business? What is this? Can we keep everyone employed? There was just a lot of unknowns. And, you know, the key, I think from my perspective, and I know Paul, was just, we had to be strong. We had to have a plan A, a plan B, a plan C, basically. And, you know, I think the things that kept us going and like kept, you know, our people healthy and safe was just like having, we had strict protocols in place. We did. You know, we stopped working in the office for a long time. Many of us still are not back full time. We plan to be that way for a while. You know, the guys haven't been riding in the trucks together. At first it was not together at all. Now they have to have masks inside the trucks. I mean, we had porta potties to separate groups and bathrooms, and we have a supply yard. So obviously, like, retail customers cannot come into our facility still. It's like a window type situation. So just a lot of strict protocols, acting fast, and just be diligent and just listening to the recommendations of our local health officials was really important for us. And just sticking to that, whether that's staff internally or, you know, your clients, making sure they understand where you stand.
So whenever there was just one guy or one team member in a truck at a time, were you guys having people direct report to jobs, or?
We did at the beginning of the spring. Yeah.
So out of all of this, and as crazy as it is, what do you want to stick around? I mean, I think we all had a few of these moments like, okay, if this is the new normal, any of those ahas?
Oh yeah. We talk about that a lot. So we gained a lot of efficiencies. So to give you an example, you know, a sales meeting, right? We have five of our sales guys driving back to wherever they were in town to get to the office, to meet in the conference room for an hour, and then to drive back out. Those, we're not going back to that. We're going to keep, you know, our virtual meetings. It's so easy. You know, I lead my team of field supervisors, and we have a weekly meeting, and they're just like, please, dude, let's not go back to conference room meetings. You know, they can sit in their truck, they can have lunch, and they can, you know, interact on their phone or their tablet and have that meeting. And, you know, and it's interesting to see the efficiencies that we gain from, like, the lack of company meetings and how much time we were actually wasting in person. So, you know, obviously you want to go back to, like, that culture building and that face-to-face communication is really important. But I think that we realized that we were maybe overdoing it a little bit, and people just want to get out and go to work. So we got to get better. We've gotten better at just getting communication out still, and just digitally, right? I mean, we did weekly safety meetings via video and text message. So everyone gets, you know, all year got their safety toolbox talk on their cell phone at noon on a Friday, hoping that they would sit and watch their lunch or watch their safety training and eat their lunch at the same time. And it was a video done by, you know, a field supervisor or whoever was leading the training that week. So we gained a lot of efficiencies. And so, you know, that increased our gross margin. And so I don't want to lose that. So we're going to be really careful about how we handle that going forward.
Yeah, I think I would share in those same kind of, this is working for us. I think we actually probably increased our meetings a little bit too much through this whole piece, and we've got to get back to that leaner and meaner and more creative use of time rather than just rigid structure to it. But it did quickly realize how quickly people embrace the technology, what we thought was so difficult to or impossible. And then we're like, oh no, this is not near as challenging as we thought it would be.
Absolutely.
I'm definitely going to use the safety tip, by the way, sending it out via phone or something, because we're doing staggered start times right now to try to keep crews separate from each other in the mornings, you know, people touching mowers, people around the shop. And so to sit and have to do safety topics five times in the morning, that's a big chunk of time. So that's awesome. Just figure out some PDF or something to send out via text. That's definitely going to be using that one.
I've got 100 of them for you already, Macy. I'll email you.
Send them on over.
Yeah. I mean, there's always the in-person stuff that has to happen. Maybe that's on site or whatever with smaller groups, but you know, for your just overreaching stuff that all the companies should receive it, that saved us a lot of time. And you know, we used to have big circles where there was like 50 people in a big stretch circle, and then you would do your meeting. And then after, like, looking back on that, I'm like, how did anyone even hear what we were saying? Like, it's just like, it's too much. And it's really so time consuming. Yeah.
I agree with that point. There's always someone just hiding behind somebody else that's saying, I'm not.
Chatter.
I don't need to listen to this. This isn't really important.
Right.
Wow. All right. And so, and then from even the client perspective, I mean, and does your role, do you have a high level engagement with clients, or is your client the team within the inside?
Yeah, I'm mostly inside facing. I don't get to deal with the clients until they're either really happy or really angry. That's when it gets escalated to me. So, yeah, I, I get to see the good, the really good and the really bad. But yeah, no, I'm not super client facing. That's a lot of our sales team and our account managers.
And so that experience, just with the engagement through COVID, did they, you know, did it build more confidence? I mean, obviously a lot of people have changed how they're even operating too, but did you feel that was a stronger relationship through all this?
I think so. I think our clients appreciated the fact, I think that saved us a lot. We would, when we did our appointment confirmations for new clients or new leads, you know, we sent out our COVID protocol ahead of time so they understood what to expect. And, you know, I think that helped people just feel like, hey, I'm really dealing with a company that cares about my safety. And, you know, we were really worried that people would be doing the opposite and not calling, right? Instead, they would just be waiting and be scared to have any sort of service provider out to their home or their business. But we, you know, were fortunate. We saw the opposite. We made sure to make it public, like what our protocols were from the get-go.
That proactiveness. I recognize that those are the parts that we miss in the details because everyone's either panicking. They go manage the crew, they go manage the client, but then it's that middle spot that's like, well, how do you get in front of all these things? And so... So what kind of team have you built around that? I mean, that serves the internal parts as general manager. How do you have the support to sort of manage all that piece?
So the big part that I've been working on the last 3 years is developing what, you might call like a mid-level management team. It used to be me and I managed, or I had all these direct reports in the field, and that it was that way for the first 2.5 years when I took over the GM role. And those were like the most challenging 2.5 years of my career so far at Sun Valley. So, we start to see that breaking when, you know, you're stretched too thin, you can't keep up with all of it. And you're really missing that close interaction with a lot of people that you're trying to lead. So I started developing people that we call field supervisor role. And so those people right now at this point are directly responsible for, you know, making their own hiring decisions, disciplinary action with my, you know, I assist all of them with all of that stuff, promoting, training. They're in charge of safety for all of their teams. And we basically just kind of split it up by divisions or depending on how many people are the makeup for that one field supervisor. So right now we have 4 at that level.
Were you able to inherit any of those people through some of the acquisitions that you've gone through?
Yes. So one of them is our irrigation division manager who we just brought on in October.
Yeah, I think you're really fortunate when you can make that happen through an acquisition and the top talent doesn't just leave, right?
Yeah.
But I remember going through that transition of not being directly in control a lot of stuff. I won't say enabling others because I didn't do that for a couple of years after we made the decision to not be in control, but it was challenging at the time. And, but I remember, you know, a few key moments where somebody surprised me with how they handled something so much better than I would have. And I was like, oh, that's why we do this, you know, cause there's advantage in the diversity of the team.
I think so too. I think they bring a better perspective, right? I've never worked in the field. So there's that level of, respect and perception that, you know, I don't necessarily have. I think the biggest thing, you know, that they bring to the table is just, you know, their drive to like want to make their teams better and grow their teams. And so I think that that is really what we work on with what I work on with them is just their development as like leaders, holding them accountable. They love the accountability part. Surprisingly, that's something that I've really been focusing on and we've seen a huge change in this level of people is they start to change really fast once you start holding them accountable, give them information like all the time, be consistent. And it's working really well for us right now.
So Macy, I'm interested in just because you're in that path, right? Recent promotion to branch manager. So you're living that. What's it been like for you these last few months?
A lot of running. Haven't lost any weight, but it's a lot of running. Apparently doesn't equate the same as actually running outside. But I definitely get that side. And I'm kind of interested on your take because I'm a young woman in the industry running a piece of the business. And so I'm interested, since you don't have landscape experience, like you said, your first few years, you know, how did you overcome that? I think all of our younger women listeners would love to hear how you overcame that, even if they only have a year of experience. You know, what's your take on it?
Yeah, I really love talking about that, because that was a bit, obviously, like a really big hurdle, I think, as a woman in this industry, not having a background. I remember like my first meeting as general manager, and like we made the announcement, right? And here I was like in front of this huge group of guys, like, no, they knew who I was. They knew that I did the business development for the company. And now I'm going to be the GM, and they don't have any clue what a GM is. Like, they have no idea. They're like, what does this mean to me? You know, like, okay, whatever. And so it took a lot of like face-to-face, like one-on-one time with them, getting out to their job sites, going to ask questions. What are you doing? Show me what you do. Big thing for me was like memorizing their wives' names or their, you know, husbands' names, their children's names. Like, what do they like to do? What kind of food do they like to eat? Like, you know, that to me was like where I put my focus, because that's how I gained respect. I couldn't do it by like necessarily like getting down and dirty and building some sweet patios or water features, but I could relate to them on like, oh my gosh, talk to me about this. Show me your pictures on your phone because you're so talented. And just relating to them about the passion, like what we're here to do, I guess, is really what it was my main focus. So I think the first year that I took over, I remember, well, I'll never forget it, but I like shut my office door and like just broke down crying, like just lost it. I was like, I am done. I don't want to do this anymore. This is a horrible idea. You know, and then you're thinking about like the passion that I had gained for this industry. Like, it's really easy. It's super contagious. Like, now I love the industry. I'm never going to leave it. So, you know, I think that once you have that and you have that drive and you know, you start to gain that respect and that people, you know, now I just, that's not even a thought in my head now. That doesn't even cross my mind when I may have a new hire or I go out to somebody's job site. That doesn't even cross my mind at this point.
I think that's so great. It's not that, you know, sometimes we don't have time to get out there on a mower or throw a wheelbarrow of sand down with them. It's that that's not a good use of our time, the most efficient thing. And that wasn't the most efficient thing for you. So just finding those things, I think, is a great alternative that you did. So I'm sure our listeners will absolutely love hearing those things.
It seems like grabbing confidence every step of the way, right? If that experience, fail or win, helped you learn the next step to the next step and building on those pieces there. And just, you know, knowing you and your personality, you weren't going to take no, you're going to figure this thing out and move it in the right direction, regardless if you had everybody with you or not. But it is to take on and just build on that confidence in any role that we're in. All this is scary. It's completely we just had our snow event, a big one, pardon me. And everybody's getting fried, right? And this is a very stressful industry. It takes you these very highs and lows very quickly. And it is not for everybody, but it's just to know that you're with together, be able to close the door, hang out in a quiet room for a few minutes, and then, all right, I'm back. Let's go. Let's do this. That kind of piece. So it's a very real experience through this.
And everybody, and that's, I think, a big part, Macy, just as a newer manager or a newer leader or in a newer position, I think that people can take away is you have to understand everyone has those highs and lows at whatever level they are at the company, the CEO, you know, down to the new guy who's in year one of, you know, mowing or whatever. You just have to understand they're going to have those days like where they want to cry, but they can't, you know, they're at their mower and, or they're in their truck. And I think that's just understanding like, and that's what I try to tell my team. It's like, everyone thinks like they're the busiest, right? Everybody thinks that they're the most stressed. And so we always start our meetings just like talking about that. Like I say, where's your workload? Where are you at right now? Like 1 to 10. And then like, let's talk about that. If somebody's at like a 12, like that's a red flag, right? Okay. What are we doing to support our teammate here? Do you need something off your plate? Like, what can we do? And I think that's important. We have to like always be aware because we are a team. And if we're going to like row this boat together, we can't leave people behind. It's just not going to work.
Yeah. And I think every leader needs to figure out those few like signature moves that they have to check in with people and get authentic and build that relationship and add value. And for you, it's getting to know their whole family. And, you know, for me, I used to cook breakfast for everybody in the office at like 5 a.m. during snowstorms. I was like, short order cook, how do you want your eggs? And just got a hot plate, you know, and just whatever can work for you, you know, is important to show that and do it all the time. So people never forget, you know, your good intentions of trying to help them.
I like the scaling too. Just because if I called any one of my team members and I said, hey, could you handle something for me? They're going to say, yeah, they're going to figure it out. But, you know, they might be at a 12, but they're just saying, yeah, I'll figure it out. You know, I just straight up asking, you know, where are you at from 1 to 10? And, you know, you just know they're like, I'm at a 9. Okay, great. You know, let me know if you need help and then call somebody else. I think that's a really good way to go about it.
I think it's funny. I think one time somebody had said they're like a 5 and everyone's like, oh, you need more to do. Okay.
It's a trick question.
It's a trick question.
It's totally a trick question.
You never said 5 again.
Right. Well, it's what we even do at the end of this segment. It's, you know, that rose and thorn theory we've done in a business. You just need to recognize where people are. And if after a snow event or a busy spring, or then it's also that something going on in their family life. We've gone through rose and thorns through our company through number of meetings, and we've gone across the around the table, and it was not one piece about work. And it wasn't bad, but it was health issues in families or excitement things going on in families. And that's what, you know, and so maybe they see work as an opportunity to do those things, and that's okay. And so I've been trying to be clear that, like, you don't have to share just professional parts, but it's what's on people's minds. And so, hey, can we get your full attention? It might be hard for some people sometimes when they're dealing with other parts. And so snowstorms, I'm sure I go around that room today. I'm like, hey, how y'all doing? And I'm going to get one finger, and it's like, one, right? And then it's like, okay, I'm going to translate that to 10.
That stuff affects them anyway, right? So you can either know about it and talk about it and figure out who you're working with that day or how much they're able to show up, or you can ignore it and pretend it doesn't exist and, you know, see what happens. But it'll go sideways really quick, right? If you don't address those things.
Snow in particular is interesting because it's emotionally draining, it's physically draining, and you're away from your family for like hours upon hours upon hours, right? So that compounds and whatever else like you've got going on at home. So, you know, that is something that is a big challenge. It's always been a challenge. Snow removal. Yeah. That's what I always tell people. It's like, you're either cut out for this or you're just not, you're not going to like it at all. So
I live in Texas.
Dan Foley years ago taught me to write thank you notes to the spouses and children of the guys who were working throughout the snowstorm.
That's awesome.
And thank them the fact that mom or dad was away for 3 days straight, but they were saving lives. And, you know, thanks for being, it was like, that's a game changer for sure.
Wow. Yeah. I love that idea.
Yeah. We did the take them out, you know, here's the gift card, go to eat someplace. I want it, you know, just, and it was just, this is how it's supposed to be used, right? And I've heard of and agree that, and if actually most of the time that we hear back, it is that family element and that, and this, like, I can't take this many calls. My spouse is killing me when I wake up in the middle of the night with all these calls. You know, what can we do about that? And it's, it is just holding their hands, helping them through it, you know. And at the moment, the conversation is to scale. Before an event, I'm fine, I'm good. After event, this is nuts, what are you talking about? A couple days later, I'm fine, I'm okay, right? And so it's just know when to attack on things. Don't talk about much during an event. That's not really the great timing.
Right.
And the authenticity, I think, that goes around that. And so I think of the rose and thorn, and it's a moment and a glance and a time just to talk about things. And sometimes there's not enough time in the meetings or in our days to really dig into something, but you hear it and then you know what is important to talk about and follow up. And especially in your direct report world, like, that's a really important part. When it gets the companies larger and larger, it's just good to be aware, but it's hard to be authentic with an entire company, right? And care, you know, and care all the way down to the little parts about pieces. It's just, but you've got to find those ways to really bring that enthusiasm and engagement in different ways.
I think just, you know, for us, it's just focusing on that internal communication. How can we always do better? Are we doing enough? Like, are people feeling connected, especially during COVID, right? When we're not seeing each other every day or a lot of the time, you know, for me, and I was able to manage the company most of the time remotely. And so that was, I had to over communicate. Like, I had to make sure I had my cell phone on at all times. And I was picking up the phone all every single time. So now it's like just habit. Like, and my team has even commented, they're like, you know, I appreciate that I can just get a hold of you anytime. You know, before when I was in the office, I don't think I was as cognizant of that because I was actually seeing people in person, but now it's just like super important to be available. But that's basically what, you know, the thing that I've tried to focus on is just that communication piece when in these hard times, you know, when we have these huge snow events. We had, you know, the biggest snow event we've ever had last week too. And it was just hard on everyone. I mean, people are still recovering just mentally from that trauma. But I think it's important just to like be available and show people that you care. It does a lot for business. It's also, you know, being a good human. So that's good too.
Oh yeah, that part, right?
That part, but
yeah. Oh, yeah. Humans.
So Ashley, as we start to wrap up, what's kind of the big thing in 2021 that is on your horizons here?
Oh my gosh, where do I begin? So just if we're going to like focus on one big thing, it really is, it's about the growth that we're trying to achieve. We've got some hefty growth goals, scalable, which for us, we're at a point where we have to like define some company systems and processes. We've implemented a lot of new technology in the last year and a half. So we've got a couple more systems that we're wrapping up here in the next couple months. So just honing those systems, like making sure our foundation is solid so that we can scale is really where my focus is going to be. And then continuing to develop the managers that I have under me so that they can, you know, continue to grow in their position and their leadership skills. That's really my main focus. We just had our like big strategic meeting like last week. So I'm still just going through, like just trying to absorb all that information too. It's a lot. Spring comes fast for us. I mean, in the Midwest, you think like, oh, you know, it snows here and there and we have some extra time to like get stuff done. And that's never the case.
I think that's universal for every company.
Yeah.
It used to be like, I would agree though, like in the Northeast here, it was that dramatic, like, oh, winter's off. Winter is the time to plan. And that's December to like March for us. And as a smaller business, we definitely did. And hey, we shut the office down a little early. It was fun. I've watched over the last few years, like we're a 12-month season now, right? We need to think that way. And I'm continuing to use the analogy. We're trying to change the oil or the car, the wheels on a race car going 100 miles an hour. Like there is no stopping to plan, to prepare, no pit stops. It is just move, 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 move. And I think we still got to get a few people in the organization recognizing that this is just a different kind of work we're doing, and we're 12 months. And so those
I agree.
Texas folks down there, they we got to just understand what they got to go through. Right. Cause there is no pause. It's just more. Right.
Well, go ahead, Macy.
No. Yeah. We pretty much get Christmas. That's about it. Maybe like a week into January. I mean, I'm almost done with grass cutbacks down here. We have a lot of grass cutbacks to do. So it's a different pre-emergence almost all the way out.
I love our region for the change in seasons, right? And even just the environment of it, but at the same time, like what is intensive landscape goes away and then a new and certainly intenser snow season. And by the time snow is just really, we're done with it. Good. Here comes spring eventually. Right. So I don't think you could transport our people down to Florida and say, hey, this is going to have to be, you're going to get like a couple weeks off of not having to deal with this turf. Like, what? Wait, what? No, I want a break. So, different worlds, different parts.
Yeah. I mean, even just like budget standpoint, looking at that stuff, it's like for you guys, like we stop mowers at September, whenever you guys stop mowing, if it's cool season or whatever, but Florida's like, we're going to keep going, like gas and everything. Like Texas, the Bermuda goes dormant, so you have 3 months where you're not really putting a mower out on a property. So it's just different, like thinking about those things on the business side.
Yeah, the snow removal budgeting for us, you know, we're in Nebraska, we're not a big snow market. We get average like 26 inches a year. So we really just dial back that budget because we just don't know what to expect. But then you have a year like this year and we're already at almost 38 inches. So it's just like, you just never know what you're going to get. I mean, it's that extreme. And I mean, last year we were sitting at, I think, 22. So it's just one of those things that you can't really plan for from a budgetary standpoint. You just kind of have to play it safe. And then if you have a great year, you've got a nice spring cushion. That's how we look at it.
Yep. Did you see my face when you said 26 inches? I was like, what?
That's nothing compared to what Brett gets out there, I'm sure.
Come on. We just
Brett, I think we need to talk about snow contract structures in a future podcast. And
you have two very passionate snow people.
There is a way.
And you don't need a lot of snow to make really big snow business. I've learned
I'd
that
love to talk to you guys about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to have we have them throughout the company, but they're not shared on our side of the system because it's Texas. We're not a snow market. But earlier this year, we had a slight chance of snow and more ice than anything. And so I was like calling my regional guy up on the East Coast. I was like, hey, can you share the contracts with me? Because we don't have anything in our system for this.
We always together. It's going to snow tomorrow. Let's throw something together real fast here.
I was trying to hold off on going to Texas for snow. Some of the national bids were like, you got to do Texas too. And we're like, do we really want this book of business? It's going to be a lot.
Great of work. Market.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's as good a place as any to start wrapping up, I guess. Ashley, as you know, we end every episode of our podcast with Rose and Thorn, where we basically just check in about something going great for us and something that's maybe a little sticky. We'll share first and give you a minute to consider what you'd like to share. Although you've shared plenty of things already, but sure. Brett or Macy, you want to kick us off?
I can go. So my rose is that me and my fiance are getting a puppy. A little crazy right now, you know, starting a new job, but we found a perfect one. So we are getting a puppy and we're very excited about that. Wanted one for a really long time. And then my thorn is just, I'm supposed to go wedding dress shopping this weekend and my mom tested positive for COVID today. So that's my thorn for the week.
Ew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank goodness for FaceTime.
I'm going to call that probably the biggest thorn we've had here. Like that, I don't know. That has topped all other thorns. Even the Bills lost to Kansas City, Ashley. So that's
go Chiefs.
Yeah.
Chiefs. Yes.
I'm not sure I want to follow that. I have, we have, good snow, and exciting season here. Finally, winter's begun. We have the opportunity to, we're skiing with the family. So we're enjoying it and we're probably seeing some revenue generation from it. So all that has become the positive spin. Thorns. I think, you know, today it's just, even the part was, there isn't that much time left before Green shows up here. And are we completely ready? And I can get anxiety really fast if I think about it, but I'm learning to breathe and learning, and I've got a wonderful team and we're going to figure it out. And so, and we always do, but, and we've learned to just simplify every year. We're learning a little bit less, take on, and we'll do it a little better. So, that thorn will quickly turn to a rose, I'm sure.
Well, I'll start with my thorn. I got accepted to this awesome international MBA program about 9 months ago and had planned my intake for now since the fall was obviously out of the question, and ended up having to defer until this coming fall instead of going to France this week for my first residential week of the program. So kind of bummed, sort of cleared my schedule for a big workload and take this next step in my professional development, and I've got to sit around for 6 months. So the roses, I'm starting to backfill some of the schedule I cleared with some good stuff again, but excited to get back to that when I can.
That's going to be awesome when you finally get to go though. It sucks right now, but that's really exciting. Good for you.
That is awesome.
Yeah. There's 5 residential weeks in Brazil, China, 2 in France, and 1 in Raleigh, North Carolina over the course of 18 months. So wow. I'm super stoked for it.
How are you going to do the podcast from all? Are you going to just like live from?
I'm going to call out for my first week ever, like you have so many times, Brad.
Yeah, that's right.
It's going to be like 2 a.m. for you.
Yeah.
No, I work with so many people in so many time zones in Madagascar and stuff that trust me, I'm so used to it. And I could call in maybe. I just don't know if I want to carry this mic around. That's the question.
That's awesome. Well, I've got two roses, I would say. So I'm also getting a puppy on February 18th. So yay, Macy, we'll have to connect on that. and my Chiefs are in the Super Bowl. I am a Kansas Cityan. That's where I grew up. So this is a big deal. Number two for us, our second year in a row. And then I think my thorn is that I canceled a much needed vacation because of COVID. So I'm looking to figure that out. I got to get some time off before spring. So we'll see.
Find you
a cabin. Yeah. Find you a cabin somewhere and just sleep in.
Yeah.
No Wi-Fi. That's the best part of it. No Wi-Fi. Just
yes.
Connect anything.
Well, Ashley, thank you so much again for being part of Growing in the Green Industry podcast. And thank you to all of our listeners for listening every week. Please don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. And take care, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Take care.
Guys.
Thank you.